You're listening to GRayRecords.com, your place for music plus more. You enjoy.
Okay, let's dive in. So picture this, right? Take a huge modern hit, like Drake's One Dance, something everyone knows.
Yeah.
And then try to imagine hearing that on like an old scratchy wax cylinder from the 1800s.
Right. It feels totally wrong. It's almost comical.
It's absurd, isn't it? Like completely jarring.
Right.
That contrast just highlights the huge gap, the chasm between now and then.
It really does. The technology has just fundamentally reshaped, well, everything about how we experience music.
Absolutely. And that incredible journey, that contrast, is exactly what this deep dive is all about. You've shared a bunch of sources with us, tracing this really winding history of the music industry.
Mm-hmm.
So our mission here is to walk you through that material. We want to pull out the key moments, the turning points, to really understand how we got from those very first attempts at capturing sound to having, well, basically all the music in the world instantly available.
Yeah, we're going to trace it right from the beginning. From those first inventions trying to just, you know, visualize sound waves.
Mm-hmm.
Through the long era of physical stuff, vinyl, CDs, then grappling with that huge shock of digital piracy, and ending up where we are today in this really complex world of streaming.
It's a story full of like amazing inventions, big cultural shifts, and how business and art constantly react to technology.
Definitely.
So let's rewind way back before you could even play anything back, before there was an industry as we know it. Who were the absolute pioneers? The sources point to someone are often overlooked.
Right, you have to start with Edouard Léon Scott de Martinville, a Parisian guy, inventor, printer, bookseller. And he was working way before Edison, patented his device, the phonautograph, back in 1857.
What did that actually do? It wasn't like listening to a record, was it?
No, not at all. Critically, it could only record sound. It couldn't play it back. Think of a horn focusing sound waves onto a membrane, which vibrates a stylus, and that stylus scratches a line onto like soot-covered paper or glass that's moving past it. So you get a visual line. A picture of the sound wave.
Wow, just seeing the sound wave, that's a completely different goal than listening. What was he actually trying to achieve?
He wasn't thinking about music at all, really. He called it natural stenography.
Hmm?
His idea was it could automatically write down speech visually.
Mm-hmm.
You know, be a tool for secretaries or maybe linguists.
Like automated transcription, but visual.
Exactly. But it didn't really work out practically. It wasn't commercially successful. It kind of faded away.
So, no fortune for him. His main idea didn't quite land. But the sources say his work was still fundamental. How come?
Because even though it had limits and Scott didn't profit, the phonautograph proved the basic concept. It showed that sound waves could be turned into a physical, lasting form.
Okay. The principle.
Right. And that principle directly influenced people later, like Alexander Graham Bell with the telephone and definitely Thomas Edison. Scott sort of laid the groundwork. Scientifically.
And then there's that amazing discovery much later in 2008.
Yes. That's so cool. Researchers took some of his old phonautograms from 1860, those soot tracings, and used modern tech to scan them and turn them back into sound.
And they could actually hear something.
Yeah, little snippets of a French folk song, someone speaking. So in a way, his recordings finally got played back, you know, over a century later. It really cemented his place as the earliest known sound recorder.
Okay, so Scott captures the shape of sound, but the revolution, the thing that really kicked off an industry, needed playback, bringing the sound back, which leads us to the big name, Thomas Edison.
Exactly. Edison's phonograph, 1877. That was the absolute game changer. Its brilliance was that it could do both. It could record sound usually onto a cylinder, first tinfoil, then wax, and it could play it back.
And just like that, people could hear recorded sound for the first time.
Precisely. It was huge. Monumental. For the first time ever, you could capture a performance, a voice, music, and reproduce it. Anyone, anywhere, anytime.
It wasn't just about saving sound, it was about sharing it.
Mm-hmm. And that, naturally, is where the business side starts.
Right. If you can copy it, you can sell it.
Exactly. This led pretty quickly to the first record companies, like Columbia Records, forming early on. They saw the potential, and the format itself changed too, right? Moving from those bulky cylinders to flat discs.
Yeah, the flat discs were much easier to store and, crucially, to mass produce. That really set the stage for the record as we think of it.
And those discs, well, they basically ruled the 20th century, starting with vinyl.
Ah, yes, vinyl, the LP.
The vinyl record. And a really key development there was Columbia Records again, actually. In 1948, they introduced the 33-13 RPM long play record, the LP.
Which meant way more music on one disc.
Significantly more. You could suddenly have a whole collection of songs, an album, on one record. That was a big shift from the old 78s.
And vinyl just took over for decades, didn't it?
Oh, it reigned supreme. For most of the 20th century, it was the format. Its rise went hand in hand with the explosion of popular music genres, rock and roll, blues, country. Selling millions of albums, that whole culture was built around the vinyl LP.
But technology never stands still. The sources mention magnetic tape arriving in the late 50s.
Right, magnetic tape, like the stuff RCA developed. Initially, maybe it wasn't seen as better sounding than vinyl for home listening.
But it had other advantages.
Flexibility. Portability. It was easier to record on, easier to edit, and it opened the door for smaller formats.
And tape found its killer app, so to speak, that really pushed it forward.
The car. Definitely the car. By the late 60s, you started seeing 8-track tape players becoming common in cars.
Yeah, the sources paint that picture driving down the highway listening to the Beatles on your 8-track.
Exactly. That freedom, taking your music with you on the road like that, was totally new. A huge change in where and how you listened.
And that whole idea of personal portable music really hit its stride with Sony, right?
Oh yeah. The Sony Walkman. Iconic. It used the cassette tape, which was smaller and more durable, building on those earlier tape ideas.
And suddenly music wasn't just for the home or the car.
Suddenly you could take your tapes anywhere. Your commute, jogging, just walking around. It basically made music a personal soundtrack, always available. A massive cultural shift.
And around that same time, there was another huge shift. Music became visual in a whole new way.
MTV, absolutely. Yeah. Launched in the early 80s, it gave record labels this incredibly powerful new marketing tool.
It wasn't just about the song anymore.
Nope. Suddenly, you needed a look, a concept, a video. Artists like Madonna, Michael Jackson, they became masters of presenting this whole artistic package. It changed how music was marketed, how artists thought about their image, everything.
Okay, so we've got vinyl dominating, then tape brings portability with things like the Walkman, and MTV adds this huge visual layer. What was the next big physical format that just took over?
The 80s and 90s. That would be the compact disc.
Right.
The CD, digital sound on a little shiny disc. It dominated for, what, about 2 decades? And it marked the absolute peak for physical music sales.
What made the CD so appealing compared to vinyl and cassettes?
Well, the big selling points were sound quality. It was cleaner, no surface noise, no tape hiss, and durability.
Right, no scratches like vinyl, no tape getting chewed up.
Exactly. It just felt very modern, very perfect, and people bought into it big time.
And the business impact?
Huge boom. Record stores were everywhere, thriving. Global music sales just soared. The sources pinpoint the peak year 1999. Sales hit something like $14.6 billion in the US alone. Just staggering numbers. That was the high point for the old model.
And you think of the artists from that era, the ones selling millions of CDs. The sources list Nirvana, Tupac, Spice Girls, Oasis, Backstreet Boys, Britney, Mariah, Selena. Huge names.
Yeah, it really felt like that CD model was rock solid, unbeatable.
Until... It wasn't until the internet really hit.
Right, late 90s. The digital revolution arrived like a, well, like a tidal wave.
MP3 files.
Yep, compressed digital audio. Suddenly, music files were small enough to easily share online. And then came the software to do it.
Napster.
Napster is the most famous example. It basically enabled mass-scale file sharing. Piracy, essentially. Millions of people sharing millions of songs for free.
And those peak CD sales figures... They took a nosedive?
Oh, catastrophic is probably the right word. CD sales just plummeted in the early 2000s. Why buy the CD when you could download it or copy it from a friend for nothing?
The whole economic foundation of the industry just cracked.
It really did.
Yeah.
The industry fought back, of course. Lots of lawsuits against Napster and similar sites, even against individuals.
Expensive legal battles.
Very. And while they shut down some services, they couldn't put the genie back in the bottle. The idea that music could be easily shared online, often for free, was out there. Consumer expectations had changed fundamentally.
Even when legal digital music started, like with the iPod and iTunes, right. It wasn't enough to fix the damage.
No, not really. I mean, the iPod was hugely popular, made digital music mainstream, and people did buy songs from iTunes and other stores. But the revenue from selling 99-cent downloads just didn't make up for the massive loss in album sales revenue. It was a completely different scale.
And this had a direct impact on artists, right?
Huge impact. Suddenly, recorded music wasn't the primary income stream for many artists. They had to rely much more on touring, on merchandise, on live performance fees. Making a living from recordings got way harder.
So that whole disruption, that chaos, it eventually leads us into the current era, the age of streaming, access over ownership.
Exactly. Streaming started kind of tentatively. There were early subscription services, internet radio like Pandora. But the real breakthrough moment, the thing that reshaped the industry again, came around 2011 with companies like Spotify really gaining traction.
What was the key thing they figured out?
Licensing on a massive scale. They managed to negotiate deals with the major labels, the publishers, to offer these enormous catalogs, millions and millions of songs, all available on demand.
And that fundamentally changed how most people listen to music now.
Completely. The dominant model shifted. Instead of buying a CD or even downloading a file to own, you pay a monthly fee or listen with ads, and you get access to almost everything. It's about access, not possession.
So streaming services are king now.
They're definitely the main way people consume recorded music globally, yeah. And they generate the bulk of the recording revenue for labels and artists today.
But it's not without its controversies, is it? The sources mention ongoing debates.
Oh, absolutely. A major one is artist compensation. Many artists and songwriters argue that the per-stream payouts are just too low, that the model doesn't fairly compensate creators, especially those who aren't superstar level.
And interestingly, the streaming companies themselves, they're not all rolling in profit yet.
That's another key point from the sources, yeah. Many of these big tech platforms offering streaming are still prioritizing growth, getting more subscribers, more market share over immediate massive profits. So the economics are still kind of shaking out for everyone involved.
And this streaming era isn't just about the platforms, is it? Other tech plays a role.
For sure. Social media is massive for artists now building a fan base, marketing directly, engaging with listeners. That's critical. Then you have things like AI starting to influence recommendations, maybe even music creation down the line. Mm-hmm. And there's talk about blockchain for payments or ownership.
Right, new models potentially.
Yeah, and it means independent artists have tools and reach they never dreamed of before. They can bypass traditional gatekeepers in some ways, which is shaking up the old label structures too.
Wow. So looking back at this whole journey, it's just constant change, driven by technology. From Scott just drawing sound waves.
To Edison making them audible.
Through vinyl ruling the world, tape making it portable.
The CD boom, and then the digital bust.
The piracy shockwave, and now this age of instant access through streaming. It's kind of dizzying.
It really is. The history of recorded music is the history of technology impacting art and business. Mechanical, electrical, magnetic, optical, digital, networked. Each step has been revolutionary in its own way. Think about it, for most of human history, music was purely live, ephemeral. Then suddenly, it could be captured, copied, sold, carried around, streamed.
And the pace of change just seems to be getting faster. Our sources definitely suggest the story is far from over.
Oh, absolutely not. History tells us the next big disruption is probably already brewing somewhere. We mentioned AI, virtual reality concerts, blurring lines, maybe blockchain changing payments. Who knows what else? The only constant seems to be change itself.
It's a pretty powerful reminder, though. While the way we get music keeps morphing from a cylinder to a stream, the music itself, that core human need for it, endures.
It finds a way. It adapts to the new channels, the new formats. It survived every single one of these upheavals.
And just tracing that arc, you know, from Scott literally not being able to hear his own recording, to us having millions of songs in our pockets. It's incredible. It really makes you think about your own relationship with music, doesn't it? How has all this innovation changed how you listen, how you discover music, compared to maybe how your parents did?
Yeah, that's a great point. And looking forward, given this whole history of nonstop disruption, especially the speed of it recently, what do you think might be the next truly fundamental shift? What's waiting around the corner that could completely reshape how we experience music all over again?
Welcome to the G-Ray Records Music Network, where beats collide and rhythms come alive. Your one-stop destination for the pulse of my